The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. You're back with Brett King. I'm your host. This week, we've got a very interesting group of professionals joining us all the way from Asia. First up is Emmanuel Daniel. Emmanuel is a well-respected figure in the Asian banking scene. In fact, he leads, he's the chairman of the Asian Banker. Which puts out the Asian Banking Journal and does the big Asian Banking Summit every year. Ed, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Oh, great to be on the show, Brad, and thanks for having me.
No problem. So I'm going to just dive straight into the show today because we've got a lot of stuff to cover, and we've got three very good guests. We've also got Rob Finlay joining us from Singapore and Matt Dooley joining us from Hong Kong in the second segment. So it promises to be great. So Ed, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. I know you've got a fantastic background, particularly, you know, strong in the banking arena, but also as a journalist and on the publishing side. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, Brad, we've worked together on a number of things. So basically, what I've created is a very research-driven organization that looks at banks and looks at non-banks playing in the banking space. We evaluate them, we rate them, we tell them how they do and where the gaps are between what they want to achieve and so on. And we've been doing this for 17 years now. And in that time, I've been able to build a model by which we evaluate where they are today and where they're going to or how they're evolving into the future. Just as much as there has been so much good work on customer acquisition, retention, and technology in the U.S., there's been an explosion of similar activities in Asia. And the big thing about Asia is that it's a conglomerate of different countries. So there are very poor and developing countries, and there are countries which are very developed and have infrastructure, especially telecommunications infrastructure, which would rival, in fact, would be a little bit ahead of what's happening in the U.S. So from all of this, we get a number of things that are happening. That's where all the innovation is happening. So that's what I do. I track all of these developments, and it's good to be on the show to share with you, where I think maybe the industry is evolving.
Sure. So I want to talk about that in a moment. In fact, you're working on a book, and I'd like to get into that as well. But tell us a little bit about that diversity you talked about. Of course, we sometimes think of Asia as like one big country, but you've got such diverse economies as China, India, Japan, and so forth there, which are all in their own right incredibly different. Tell us about the diversity of the banks or the countries involved in the Asian Banker Organization.
Okay, let's be agreed on what we mean by disruptive technology. Disruptive, and for the purpose of today's conversation, yep. the focus being on how banks acquire, retain customers and relate to customers in order to do the business well, to be profitable and all that. So you have countries like Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, where and Australia, of course, and on a good day we consider Australia a part of Asia. So and all of these places, the industry is very competitive. And banks find that they have to use technology to a large extent. So in areas such as mobile technology, data, networking, and branch and channel and channel innovation, there's a lot of good work taking place in these places. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the really poor countries like Bangladesh. I can think of Bangladesh and Indonesia, right? Where without technology, they remind us that what the first principles of acquiring and retaining customers is about. And first principles goes back to risk management and finding the communal element, which actually, even in the U.S., when you think about credit scoring and so on, what you're doing is you are collecting data on a group of people in order to, identify and secure an idea of, how risky they are. And in these countries, they do it manually and they do it well. And so you find microfinance taking off in these countries with a much lower risk profile than even in the developed countries. So there are things to learn from these countries and things happening on the front.
You've worked with Muhammad Yunus before, I know, who was involved in Grameen, and then you've got Bcash out of Bangladesh, and you'd have to say these two organizations, incredibly innovative. So innovation doesn't just come from developed economies. What are you excited about that's coming out of Asia at the moment that you think is going to set the pace for the rest of the world, or lessons that we could learn from Asia?
Yeah. Before I answer that question, there's a third element, which is the law of large numbers. If you take a country like China, what China is learning in terms of how to run an institution called banking far supersedes in terms of size and volume and capacity than anything on the planet. You're talking about banks with 200 million customers, 20,000 branches. So when you think in those numbers, you start thinking of the industry as a federation rather than as institutions.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So there's a lot happening on that front as well. Now to answer, the question that, sorry,
what's hot in Asia, or what can we learn from Asia?
Yeah. I mean, a number of things are happening. On one front, all of the world's banking industry is sort of moving in tandem in terms of how we use the data that is being given to us because of technology, right? So whether it's in the U.S. or in Japan or in Bangladesh, you're looking at the availability of a lot more information on the customer, how he interacts, and all that. So that's an equal thing. What's really, a frontier thing in Asia is the telecommunications part. So even as banks in the U.S. are putting together, mobile banking sort of and infrastructure and learning from it, I think that a number of Asian countries have been a little bit further down the road just because, 3G, 4G, CDMA, all of that is far more developed. So you're able to do more things on the smart technology front. And with a young population that is a lot more receptive, they are experimenting a lot more. Now, the thing is that on the mobile front, I think all of us are learning. I mean, a lot of nifty things are happening, but there's not enough money that is being created, or not real money being created, or real customer retention capabilities being created through mobile technology. So I put mobile as being devices and channels being the area where Asia sort of is doing a lot of interesting things that is innovative.
Great. So tell me about your thesis behind your new book that you're working on at the moment.
Yeah. So what I'm doing in the book is at first I'm exploring. We've all heard this several times that banks are dinosaurs. The end of banking is coming, and all of that. And I think that
who says that?
it's like the thing to say, right? And it's been said since the 1990s. When Bill Gates started, you get the technology innovators saying that. Basically, now the thing is that I believe that we're not in a, you know, Armageddon sort of a scenario. What we are in is a change of phase scenario. And, you know, to cut a long story short, basically, banking evolved from post-Bretton Woods, the time when, you know, the value of money changed from against the price of gold to being a floated value where the markets took over and determined value on a daily basis to where we are today. So that was one phase, you know, 1971 to about 2002, 2003. And then, because of the internet, because of you know, the changing customer behavior and so on, the rules have changed. And in fact, by the time we got to 2003, banks behaved as if they were in control of the customer. So there were a lot of the data initiatives, putting together data infrastructure, was based on the presumption that if we knew more about the customer,
customer doesn't have any choice, right?
Customer doesn't have a choice. We can pick the customer. We can target the customer. We can make it happen. I think we are now entering a phase where it's completely put on its head, which is that the customer is in charge. The bank has to decide whether it's a utility or it has to fragment its proposition to be you know, specific to different customers and so on. So it's actually a customer-driven world, and that does things to the industry which the industry needs to think about. So when we think about things like Bitcoin, for example, and that's being talked a lot. And in fact, I was surprised that, you know, although Bitcoin would be more of a, you know, we don't really know who the originator was, but, you know, assuming it's a more of a Western development, it's taken off amazingly in Asia because in Europe, Bitcoin became, you know, important because of the distrust of the euro, right? There's no such distrust in Asia, but here, it's more because of the playfulness of the network and the desire to use the network to trust each other, create communities, interact with each other outside of the sphere of regulated institutions. So we are entering a whole new dimension where the rules are no longer what they used to be. So any bank that is doing work in data mining, in cloud computing, and channel innovation needs to have that in their mind, that they're no longer in charge. They are now learning where the customer is going and what the customer how the customer is behaving. And the institutions for that new dimension do not exist at the moment. So we are all in a learning phase.
So it's almost as if we've got to figure out what is banking from this point forward, because there are going to be new participants on the fringes of banking. Do they need to be regulated? Do they just need to connect to a regulated entity? You know, but the lines are blurring, aren't they? What you would consider a bank in the old days, and what you see as banking now, you know, there's the lines are blurring. Like PayPal is doing a function that traditionally would have only been owned by a bank. You know, Square is sort of infringing on the MasterCard Visa players because they're now bringing on merchants. So the lines are blurring. How's this going to play out from a view of, you know, the definition of banking, Ed?
Yeah, exactly. So in that regard, you know, a number of things that banks wish that they could do well, non-banks and, you know, other forms of players are doing much better. So banks feel like they need to be an IT company or a telco or, you know, a social media platform. And so they're redefining their roles, redefining what, you know, what they are as an institution in that space. Now, when we evaluate banks or banking products, so take payments, for example, we're now asking questions to customers that questions like, you know, who is your primary provider? And the primary provider may not be a bank, okay?
Right.
At the moment, a lot of the work is done on the technology platform. The product platform is still highly regulated. So the regulator and governments still bring the customer back to, you know, something recognizable as a bank. So take China, for example. Very recently, Alibaba has a platform called Taobao, which is the equivalent of e-commerce site. And Taobao started a savings scheme, which looks like a deposit product, which looks like a mutual fund product, by the way. And has been growing prolifically. And so there's a lot of excitement that a non-bank is now stealing deposit market share from banks. Mm-hmm. But we need to put a pause here. I mean, instead of getting all excited, we need to understand why that is happening. Well, if you give 8% return on an investment, especially for micro investments, so you put in your loose change on a transaction into this account, of course you're going to grow very quickly. But in order to be able to do that 8%, you need to be connected back to some form of investment, and that actually goes back to the banking and the shadow banking industry in China. So the point is this, that technology driving the enthusiasm is one thing, but the product itself goes back to something we're all familiar with. So we are in a bit of an intermission stage.
Let me jump in here because we're going to run out of time for this segment. But let's think about the structural changes we need sort of to get to the 5 to 10 years out stage in the last segment. We'll ask you to come back at that and join with Rob and Matt so we can get into a bit more of the solutioning set at that point. Is that okay?
That's good. That sounds good.
Great. So that was Emmanuel Daniel from Asian Banker talking about some of the stuff he's working on. We'll be right back after this break.
What's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
Attend the Payments Conference to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference. Transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We've got the Asian show today. That is, all of our participants are participating from way over in the east in Asia. Rob Finlay joining us from Singapore this morning and Matt Dooley from Hong Kong. First of all, Rob, let me just say congratulations. This week you've had your third child, is that correct?
That is, Brett. Thank you. Yes, it's been a big week for my household, that's for sure.
Yeah, so don't look for any sleep for the next 6 months, I guess, right?
No, I've really not had much for the last 5 years anyway. So
yeah, that's true. Just get used to it. So yep. Congratulations on behalf of our listeners here at Breaking Banks. We hit a milestone last month. I was mentioning on last week's show that we hit 50,000 listeners in December. So that's a milestone for us. So on behalf of that community, Rob, we're great. We send our congratulations to you, and I'm sure the Twitterati agrees. So tell me a bit about what you're doing right now. I know you're involved in a number of things, including the Next Bank organization. But tell us about your background, how you got into this disruptive innovation space, and what you're doing right now.
Sure. Well, I guess after about 10 or 12 years of working in the design and creative industry in a range of roles, I then joined the bank industry in a customer experience and innovation role in a bank in Australia and then a bank here in Singapore. And really, as someone who was involved in the industry and felt like an outsider, but yet working inside a bank, I felt there was an opportunity for people who weren't necessarily central or mainstream to running the banking industry to have a conversation about where the industry is going and what it can do differently. And so Next Bank was really born to create a forum and a platform for people who who might want to express that opinion. And so Next Bank started as a series of events. We've done conferences here in Singapore and in Hong Kong, and we've done them in Africa, Europe, South America over the last 2 years. And we've got one coming up in the US in June in Boston. And so really it's becoming...
When did you just announce that recently?
Yep, there was a press release coming out very soon. If you go to nextbankusa.com, you'll be able to see some of the initial ideas and call for speakers and papers and so on. So we look forward to engaging the community there.
In fact, last week JP Nichols was on the show and JP mentioned the Next Bank Boston event. So that's great.
Yeah, it's good. I'm looking forward to it. So we've got some great people there running the event. Beth is helping us out there in the States and looking forward to that. But really, it's becoming not just an event series. The model for us is essentially for us to do some events and also find partners to do them as well. And we're finding that the people coming forward to run these events are really very interesting, engaged people who are, again, not necessarily event companies, but really people like ourselves who just want to see something really interesting happening to the industry. And beyond events, it's become a really great community of people and a good conversation around what banking can do. And our line is the intersection of banking, design, and technology. And design's really a key part of what we're about because we see that as our personal strength. A lot of people involved are design or creative people. And obviously, as you know, Brett, design is playing an increasingly important role to the not just the bank customer experience, but the way banks think and operate. So
absolutely. Well, you know, I remember last year there was an interesting article, I think it was last year, designers are taking over Silicon Valley, you know, but I think it's really the case now. Designers are needing to take over the customer experience within banking because it's becoming a core competency. And it's great to see that you definitely have that flavor at Next Bank, having been to a couple of your events.
Yeah, I think also, you know, bankers themselves are embracing design process and design thinking, both the IDEO term and the way to think as well. So that's been really nice to see banks sort of thinking about experimentation and customer-centric design process.
Fantastic. Now, Matt Dooley. Matt, you and I worked together, of course, for many years in the trenches at HSBC, but since then you've moved on to, your own advisory role. You're also helping Rob out with Next Bank, but tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now with Connected Asia and, what you spend your time on.
Hi, Brett. Thank you for letting me on the show. Yes, I run Connected Thinking, which is it provides like digital strategy, marketing and training for banks and insurance companies. I worked for HSBC for 20 years, And my roles within HSBC was always on the marketing side. Around 2000, I launched internet banking to Asia for HSBC. And it was a real eye-opener. So managing websites for Hong Kong users, you're predominantly dealing with the Cantonese, the Chinese community. And it was the first time experience where we were actually giving the experience back to the customers. So we involved probably the first usability testing in Asia by creating some prototypes and actually putting it with customers, and it worked. And that principle took me to London with HSBC Group and then has brought me back to Asia. Now, as Emmanuel was highlighting before, Asia is a very different, it's not a single market. There is a lot of different things happening and a different stages of development and a lot of exciting things happening in Asia. But with Connected Thinking, I offer a different perspective. My roles within HSBC were always customer-focused, always driving the customer experience, involved in design of websites predominantly, but then into mobile applications. And I think only now are banks trying to truly comprehend the change in the industry. I think for the last 10 years, it's been predominantly just keeping their traditional business model, but digitizing it. And I think now the industry is actually moving and other industries are moving and are shaping new types of financial services and new types of experiences that banks need to get involved. Also, I am involved with Next Bank. I help Rob out with the Hong Kong arm of Next Bank. We had a Next Bank Asia conference here in April. And it's a great engaging community. And it's not just bankers getting involved. It's the periphery companies, the startups, the digital marketing agencies, the experience agencies that are actually coming into play. And I think bankers are now seeing the value of well-designed applications and well-designed interfaces. And they're seeing it with customers actually engaging with them more if it's well-designed. And so now they're prepared to pay a premium to actually get it right. And simplicity is quite complex. And banking is complex because bankers made it so. So our quest is to actually... less is more, and how do we actually create an engaged financial services community, but get them to start to open up and work with others in the ecosystem that creates financial services?
So I'll direct this to both you and Rob, Matt, and either of you guys jump in here, and you probably both have thoughts on this. But, you know, to your point, Matt, we are starting to see an increased awareness. How is that manifesting itself? Are we starting to see competencies change? Are we starting to see budgets change? You know, what is that shift in Asia that gives you a feeling that finally people are waking up to the fact that digital is not just this add-on channel, but it needs to be a core competency of the organization?
Yeah, I guess there's it's been really interesting to see that certainly the leadership of banks are starting to talk about it and demand it of their businesses. And part of me thinks that it's based on an actual realization of the power of digital. And the other part of me thinks that these are leaders sort of following a trend. But either way, the banks are really thinking about how this is evolving. But it is in slow motion, I would say. I mean, you do sort of notice that the banks are taking a year or two to get their head around the fact that, okay, now we've got smartphones. What do we do with them? And then they say, well, now we need to think about this word omnichannel. What do we do with that? And so in true bank style, it's taking its time, but at the same time, at least it's happening. We are seeing budgets being allocated to not just front-end customer experience improvements that are inherently digital, but also whole business model or operating model transformations occurring where entire businesses and banks are being digitized. And I guess CommBank in Australia is a good example of and NAB as well, from what I know from that market, their entire operating systems are being replaced and digitized and streamlined a lot more effectively than they were in the past. So it's and I think to Emmanuel's point at the start, you've got such diversity in this market here where different banks are doing different things and taking digital in different ways. So we'll see how that evolves. Matt, anything to add?
I think the big thing is in Australia it was just overbanked and very competitive markets. So the banks couldn't just keep reducing their rates to actually, you know, grab customer share.
There was no longer a differentiation.
There's no differentiation. And you look at the mortgage space, the Asian Banker did some great research in 2010, 2011. And it was no surprise that the mortgage area within Australia was so competitive that to differentiate themselves, the banks had to create something totally different. And you look at ANZ and CommBank in particular, they launched their property augmented reality experience. And it was really, you know, at, you know, customers now, the way that they shop for properties, they can walk around the neighborhoods and they can get all this information on their iPhone or their Android phone. And then they can, you know, it's no longer just sitting in a branch with a branch manager. It's at the point of impact. And I think, you know, bankers love numbers. And it's when they see behaviors happening in the marketplace that they realize that they need to be with their customers. And, Asians are on the online. And they're not online through PCs, they're online through their mobile phones. And there's a lot of different behaviours happening in different countries. And some countries don't have the normal infrastructures of developed countries, so they can actually use wireless to actually jump the whole fixed line and disrupt behaviour. So you're looking at, like, Thailand, Malaysia. They're the most, and Indonesia, they're the largest communities of the world on social media.
Let's jump in and talk about that, Matt. I'll give you guys to give us your top two or three. You know, if you're looking at Asia, and you're looking at Thailand with Facebook commerce, or you're looking at Indonesia with their you know, social penetration, or China with, you know, their mobile commerce and stuff. You know, if you guys were to say these are the things in Asia that's happening that is leading the rest of the world, that is going to have an influence on the rest of the world in respect to banking or technology or mobile or social disruption, what would be your top two? Let's start with you, Matt.
Definitely China Merchants Bank in China. They're actually teaming up with Renren, which is like the Facebook of Asia, Facebook of China. And they're doing a lot of exciting things about social credit cards and really using the data that's existing within the social media platform and creating a totally new financial services experience. I also think you have to look at Australia. They're a much more developed market. They're a very competitive market, and they are doing some more advanced apps that are really tailored to differentiate their propositions. And, a good example is Bupa. Bupa Insurance teamed up with the George Institute to create a food switch app for their health insurance customers. And basically you can walk along the supermarket at any product in any on the Australian shelves, and it will choose what is the most healthiest product based on your dietary requirements. And, you know, this whole belief of looking at the ecosystem and creating something that's fresh, that's appealing to your customers, is really happening in Australia.
Good. Rob, what about you? Give us a couple of thoughts.
Yeah, sure. If I offer the other end of the spectrum and think of those markets that Emmanuel talked about before, which are at the bottom end of the spectrum, Cambodia, Myanmar and Vietnam, those kind of places where really the infrastructure for banking is really being established for the first time. And you've got companies like Visa and MasterCard, a lot of the big banks and organizations such as that, going in there to help the government set up and establish their systems. So that in itself is going to be an innovative process that harnesses modern-day technology and systems. And I guess Indonesia, as Matt touched on before, you know, the sort of things that are happening there are really amazing, where, you know, mobile penetration is almost ubiquitous, but at the same time, the underbanked is the majority. And you've got a market there that's
imagine more people for mobile. More people end up with a bank account on their phone than a physical banking artifact.
I would imagine, but the problem is that the attempts to do that so far have been relatively a bit flaky, and no one's really cracked it. And I guess they're not really incentivized to crack it because there's not a lot of money in it for them. But the opportunity there is really huge, and someone's going to crack it soon enough.
Very good. Great. Well, thanks, Rob and Matt. Let's just have a quick break, guys, and then we'll invite ED back, and we'll have a bit of visioning and get you guys to think about the future about 5 to 10 years out. Sound okay?
Great.
Sounds good. Great.
Great. So you're with Brett King. We're on Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this break.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
Attend the Payments Conference to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference. Transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK. You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Breaking Banks. Thanks for sticking around with us. So we have three experts calling in very early in the morning from Asia. ED, I forgot to ask where you are. Are you in Singapore or in Beijing today, or where are you?
Yeah, today I'm in Singapore. It's a good question.
ED is one of the very few people that competes with me in respect to the number of airline miles he travels each year. But So, Ed, this part of the show, we always like to sort of do the futurist thing, and sort of look 5 to 10 years out. And, you've seen the evolution of the industry. So looking 5 to 10 years out, what's going to be different? How is this going to evolve and emerge over the next few years? What is it that's going to be that's going to look different from what it is today?
So, Brett, the thing that I occupy in my mind, trying to crack is how much of, all of that we talk about in terms of channel and innovation is pilot, and how much of it is going to be real, and how much of it, we can actually draw a dotted line back to the real business. I think that it's one thing for the technology people to talk about all of these innovations taking place and how that's going to transform things and how the institution itself is going to change and so on. But there are the business people who see things as business as usual. So, you know, whether you are in, you know, downtown Kentucky or in Kuala Lumpur, you find that in some societies, despite all of this innovation, the real money still comes from the old money. The real money still comes from the conservative depositor. And so that that traction isn't taking place yet. So some banks can actually afford to sit back and wait this whole process through because the, you know, their profitability for the moment is a very you know, steady a very steady state sort of thing. Now the thing is that looking five
so, years, unless that's under threat, there may not be the big changes. Yeah.
So the point is that there are enough banks out there for doing nothing, basically, right? And they can afford to because the world hasn't changed on them yet, you know. So and a lot of what is happening is at a pilot stage in a sense. So the thing is that the elements that will change that 5-year scenario. Of course, regulation is one of them. And it's very interesting to see regulators around the world tiptoeing around the Bitcoin issue. You know, they did not come out and say, you know, this is evil, this is bad, we can't regulate this and all that. They said, this is interesting, we don't understand it, we want to leave it to grow into a monster if it wants to, but the moment you monetize Bitcoin, we're going to get you. You know, we're going to put a tax on you, we're going to, you know, capitalize you and all that. So so the way in which regulators around the world you know, embrace how they should be dealing with technology is very interesting. At the moment, the amount of compliance they're putting around it is way too onerous to be creative in the fullest sense. I think that customers are giving off more data than regulators want them to, and stuff like that. So that's going to have an impact. I'd say that the five-year horizon will be something where on in tactical areas such as payments and products and banking products that can be hived off banking. So I'm thinking about structured products for wealth management. I'm thinking about mutual funds, things that can exist outside the banking industry. That's where you will find the way in which customers relate to banks being transformed dramatically. And the rest of it is that we may not even think of it as banking, but something that revolves around the lifestyle of a customer. So for example, if a customer goes to a store to buy something, he's carrying his credit card with him. That's banking. But he's buying, you know, clothes, or he's buying a grocery.
But if he uses Bitcoin to pay for those clothes.
Yeah. So the point is that he's defining exactly what his ecosystem is all about. And banks need to think in that way to figure out, you know, what's the relevance of banking to that experience. So up to now, banks have been docile in thinking that, you know, customers love getting a mortgage from them. You know, customers love buying a house. They don't love getting a mortgage. So it's about buying a house. So then when you change your proposition to enhance the customer's experience in buying a house, then you become more relevant to the customer. So I'm talking about those type of, you know, ecosystem changes that need to take place. The institutional part is, I wouldn't go so far as to say that banks are going to be completely disintermediated, but they will definitely need to redefine how they want to play that space.
That connection with the customer is obviously going to be challenged, yeah.
Right, and I'll say this, that almost all of the innovation taking place today is not yet touching the bottom line enough to convince the old-fashioned head of retail or the old-fashioned CEO. So this is the thing that I spend my time trying to crack.
Sure.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for that. So, Rob, what about you? What do you think? 5 to 10 years out, what's the changes? What are we going to start to see that we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't recognize as banking today? What's going to be out there?
I think it's going to be an interesting way to see how the whole Asian landscape evolves and how fast different markets evolve to different points. I'll be interested to see how families that have traditionally been involved in running banks are still involved in the future. A lot of countries have very, very strong families that run their you know, economies, Philippines, right, for example, and Thailand. Be interesting to see how influential they are in the future versus governments and a more traditional way of running organizations. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, regulators can, as Emmanuel's pointed out, how regulators can keep up with the speed of innovation that's happening here that really is being driven by the consumer around digital technology. I think what you'll find in a few or 5 years' time is they'll still be the same names, I would assume. If I think of Singapore as an example where I am now, you probably still have the same names that are running the money, but they'll be dramatically trying to push themselves to a new form. I think you'll find that startups might offer something or struggle to get a lot of traction because of the trust factor here and the understanding of what it's about. My correlation would be that in an underdeveloped market, there's a lot of fallback on the old names that are well known.
Right. So that might give the likes of the the conglomerates in India and Indonesia and Malaysia, for example, which are very well established, an advantage, like Tesco has in the UK. Could we start to see some of these big conglomerates get into the fringes of retail or alternative financial services?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess Korea and Japan are doing that a bit, and you'll find there are brands that maybe, I mean, telcos is the other example, which we've touched on before as well. I mean, Telkomsel in Indonesia or a lot of those telecommunications companies are trying very hard to make an impact. So see how that evolves. But I think that'll probably be the other space where they can make an impact is other big industries that want to get into money. And telco has always been the case. And Australia has been talking about that for years, but it's never really happened. But I think in countries like Indonesia and Philippines, they'll be the ones where those other industries will start to impact banking pretty hard. But all up for grabs.
You know, Brett. Brett, can you hear me?
So the countries that were mentioned, the amazing thing is not the technology itself or the institution of the banks, but the business models that are changing in a dramatic way. And I put my finger on supply chains and how that's evolving right across Asia. Again, in some countries, you don't have roads, but, foodstuff needs to get to the consumer, in the most cost-efficient way. Other countries are highly, they've got amazing supply chain that you can, the entire e-commerce capability works amazingly well. So the thing is that instead of saying how the banking institution itself will evolve, I think if we put our minds on the business models, that's what's going to dramatically change. A lot is happening on the front.
Lower margins, a higher cost of acquisition, challenges to the distribution. So yeah, the way revenue is captured, for example, is going to be significant changes to that. Yeah,
and in order for all of that to happen, the amount of information that needs to be given to the consumer is going to increase. So the consumer is not going to allow a bank to say, if you want to look at your latest balance, you got to call in and you got to give your password and stuff like that. He wants to see it at the point of interaction, at the point of transaction. So the banks, despite what regulators would like them to do, need to be more forthcoming with information to the consumer at the point of transaction. So
right, we've had a lot of pushback on the whole data privacy thing, but the reality is, if you're giving customers back their own data, there shouldn't be a data privacy issue.
And yet regulators make a big deal out of that, you know. So I think a lot of that innovation will, in the next 5 years, that's where the real stuff is going to be taking place on the business model front.
Great, Matt.
So from where I sit, there's four major trends that are happening in Asia that's going to really shape. The first one is the Internet of Things. Now, that's been talked about for 10 years, where smart objects exist in a home environment or a work environment and simply connect to provide information, and that information is shared across not only that experience but with other entities. And I agree with the other speakers that banks will have to actually work together with other parties to grab what information is available and provide value back, little nuggets of insights back to customers. And the Internet of Things, Korea, Japan, Hong Kong and Singapore are some of the countries leading the way in terms of creating that technology, but they're actually implementing that technology. The second point is probably telco, what I put as 3.0. So they've gone from moving from fixed line to 3G, 4G networks. But, you know, where the money is how do you actually get industries to wake up and use these digital networks? And look at Australia as one of the leading telcos. Telstra has come out on the 23rd of October this year with their annual results. And their results were positive for the first time because of their entertainment arm. And their announcement was that they were going to move into healthcare. So they're creating a whole new business division looking at digitizing the healthcare operations and industry for Australia. And basically, they'll move from just creating a telco network to creating a platform for businesses to connect. And if you look at the whole healthcare system and ecosystem, they will simply run that platform, and the doctors, the patients, the health pharmaceutical companies will simply just plug into that network and have to use that network. And probably one of the, if banks don't wake up and start to create new relevant propositions in financial services, these telcos will just simply go and digitize the industry and create a new platform for banks to simply connect to. But the real value will be in the data exchanges for the customer. Right. I think the third area is around engaging human interactions. So as Rob alluded to, banks are starting...
I might have to jump in there because we've got about a minute till we close, and I'd like to sort of wrap up properly and say thanks to you guys. So, but there's obviously more than enough content for us to have a second show coming up. So, Ed, just quickly, do you have a date when you expect your book to be out?
I'm working on it right now, so I should.
What's going to be the title of the book?
The working title, and I think it will be the title, is it's giving a title of a book on a before it's published is very, very interesting because I wonder if people understand.
You don't have to.
Well, but I'm calling it The Winning Bank, but and the reason The Winning Bank, the reason is
I'm sorry because we're running out of time, Ed, but we can, when you do publish the book, promise us you'll come back on and tell us about it. Okay?
Absolutely. Thanks for the privilege.
Thank you for joining us, Rob. You've got Next Bank kicking off. What have you got this year, just quickly, with Next Bank?
We've got Boston in June. We've got San Francisco probably in November. We've got Singapore in May. We've got Scandinavia, Moscow. We've got probably Mexico City. So lots of
fantastic. And what's the name of your newborn?
His name's Chester. Frederick. And so hopefully my other kids will welcome him and not beat up on him too hard.
Welcome, Chester. And Matt, thanks very much for joining us from Hong Kong, and we'd love to have you back on the show again as well.
Absolute pleasure, Brett.
Thank you all. This has been Breaking Banks for another week. We've had Emmanuel Daniel, Rob Finlay and Matt Dooley joining us from Asia. I'll see you again next week.
You
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.